The viewpoints expressed on Liberty Works Radio Network are not necessarily those of the network, its affiliates, or sponsors. This is Liberty Works Radio Network. Now live from coast to coast and around the globe. More real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Free Digital FM, as well as worldwide on the internet, courtesy of Liberty Works Radio Network. Tell your friends they can listen to this great network and support it by visiting lwrn.net. Liberty Works Radio Network brings you radio programming you will not hear anywhere else. As always, I ask you to support Liberty Works Radio Network so that this kind of radio programming can continue. You can go to lwrn.net, that's the acronym for Liberty Works Radio Network, lwrn.net, and click on the Join Donate button in the upper left-hand corner of the home page. Being grateful to our Father in Heaven for the many blessings bestowed on our country, I dedicate every show to our Father by praying as Jesus instructed us in Matthew chapter 6. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts, as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen. I invite you to visit agentfortruth.com and freedomabovefortune.com. You can subscribe to my free email newsletters there, as well as links to many informational audio and video resources. For those of you who are new to the show, I'm a former special agent with the Internal Revenue Service Criminal Investigation Division. I no longer work for the IRS because during the last 2 years of my service there, I performed an off-duty investigation into claims that the income tax laws did not actually require many Americans to file federal income tax returns and pay federal income tax, and that the IRS was actually deceiving the American public about their true income tax obligations. After gathering and analyzing a mountain of evidence, I concluded that these claims about the federal income tax system were largely true. When I asked my IRS supervisors to discuss my conclusions with me, they not only refused to have any discussions with me, but they also encouraged me to resign from the agency. So my IRS career did come to an end rather abruptly in February of 1999 when I did resign from the IRS, and I've been speaking about my experiences and conclusions regarding the federal income tax and other liberty-related matters ever since. I'm featured in a film called America, Freedom to Fascism, a film that has definitely gone viral on the internet over the years. And you can check that out by going to any search engine and typing in America, Freedom to Fascism, or you can go to freedomtofascism.com and order your own copy. Or, of course, YouTube would probably have plenty of copies of that, too. America, Freedom to Fascism. My guest this week is Randy Engel. She's the founder of the U.S. Coalition for Life and co-founder of the International Foundation for Genetic Research. Randy, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for spending some time with us.
It's my pleasure.
The reason that I came across Randy is that I was reading a newspaper article, and it was entitled, Don't Give Your Heart Away, Know the Facts About Vital Organ Transplantation. And I was just astounded by the contents of this article. Chilling would be probably the best description of the impact it had on me. But I just want to give out some websites first to make, you know, we'll give them out throughout the show. The U.S. Coalition for Life, is their website is www.uscl, that's the acronym, uscl.info. www.usc as in Charlie, L as in Lincoln, .info. And the Michael Fund is it for foundation, Randy?
It's actually International Foundation, but Michael Fund is the pseudonym.
Okay. Michael Fund is michaelfund.org. And then a Dr. Byrne, who Randy's had a long known him for quite some time and gave her some incredible information to begin with. If you type into a search engine, Life Guardian Foundation, you can get more information there. So anyway, well, Randy, let's start with just your background and what led you to this topic of organ transplantation.
Well, I've been in the pro-life movement kind of on the ground level for more than 40 years, and I was not aware that there was any controversy surrounding vital organ transplantation. And I think that's probably the case with most of your listeners, in the sense that unless you've actually had a heart transplant or liver transplant, or in case you've had a loved one who has died and you've given over and signed the organ donation papers, most people are really not attuned to all the controversy, you know, surrounding the action. So it wasn't until Dr. Byrne at the Life Guardian Foundation contacted me and asked me to investigate this as a pro-life issue. So I did, and frankly, I had the same reaction you did. My first reaction was one of really disbelief, and the second one was one of anger that that I felt duped by the organ transplant industry. So anyway, I did carry on my investigation, and I joined Dr. Byrne in the efforts of the Life Guardian Foundation to expose the organ transplant industry and make people aware that, you know, before they give their heart away and sign that donor card, they need to be fully informed. There should be informed consent as to what is involved when vital organs are taken, and what the implications are for your loved ones, especially if you have teenage children or teenage grandchildren. I think you'll want to listen very intently to the information that I'm about to give, because these are teenagers are the they have that, generally speaking, the healthiest organs, and they are the current target of the organ transplant industry.
And before we get into paired versus unpaired, in your analysis and investigation, have you found that this is basically all about the money, as so many issues are?
Yes. The organ, and, you know, I call it the industry, and it really is an industry just like other industries, with the exception, of course, that it involves the taking of one human life to save another. And it's we're dealing with a vast propaganda machine, because it's been they've been spewing out the propaganda for about 40 years, and I don't think people, you know, when they sign, they go to the Motor Vehicle Bureau and they sign that donor card, and it says, you know, when you are dead, you can take my organs. What they don't realize is that when you are dead, they can't take your organs, because the organs are no good. You have to be actually alive. In other words, we'll be getting into that whole area of brain death, which is one of the key points that I want to make today.
Okay. So you definitely found that there's some, you know, we'll talk more about the money appears to be the agenda as opposed to saving lives, because it sounds like they have to take a life to save one, so it's kind of a zero-sum game at best. Explain to the listeners.
And also, it's I think that the underlying philosophy is that the end justifies the means. You know, the surgeons who extract the heart and the liver and the kidneys, they're very much aware that of what they are doing, but the rationale is that this individual is probably going to die anyway. Why not take his organs and give it to someone who can benefit from them, as if the human body was some kind of a spare parts factory, and it's, you know, one's obligation as one is approaching death to donate one's organs. This is it's a rather macabre concept when you really get into some of the issues that we're going to be talking about.
Because you would think that the physician is certainly conscious of, maybe obviously rationalizing, but conscious of the fact that, you know, you are alive and that they're having to do certain procedures to turn off the switch. So I'm sure they know what they're doing. They may delude themselves or be deluded by others. So as far as the explain to the listeners about paired versus unpaired, because I think it's important to make that distinction.
Yes. What we're talking about today is unpaired organs. That is the liver, the heart primarily. And these are, when we talk about paired organs, these are organs of which there are two. For example, you can take one kidney from an individual, and that person, although his welfare might be diminished by that particular donation, normally he is not killed in the process. An individual may give a lobe of a liver or a lobe of a lung. And again, provided there's true informed consent from the donor and that he fully understands that the removal of these organ or organ parts will decrease his bodily function. But that's not what we're talking about today, and we're not talking about either the tissue transplantation. Because after a person is truly dead, some individuals, you know, will give their body to science, and the body's tissue is taken from that body and bones and skin and cornea. But this is done after true death. So we're not talking tissues and we're not talking paired organs. We're talking about vital singular organs. And so I just wanted to make that point because I think it is important. You know, what is legitimate and what is not legitimate.
Okay. And then with the unpaired category, what you basically found is that it's impossible, or at least the organ is of no use, unless the organ is taken out of a live, still living donor.
Yeah. Now, this fact came out in the mid 1960s. There were numerous attempts to obtain vital unpaired organs like the heart from fresh cadavers or corpses. But what became immediately clear was that the transplant surgeons need to have vital organs transplanted from a living donor. In other words, you can only get a beating heart from a living human being. And that changed the organ transplant scene, which brings us to the first really successful human heart transplant. And Joe, were you surprised by the Christian Bernard story?
Oh, very much. But before we get into that, we do have a break coming up, so you're not interrupted. Let's start in with that after the break. This is the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. My name is Joe Bannister, your host, agentfortruth.com and freedomabovefortune.com. We'll be right back with our guest, Randy Engel, about this incredible story right after these messages. Thanks for joining us.
Join the Cavalcade to Freedom, the Cavalcade back to constitutional government. Climb on board and do your part to proclaiming liberty throughout the land. Join and support Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. To view the strategic plan, to spread the word, and to get information on joining, go to www.libertyworksradionetwork.com or call the fellowship office at 410-857-5444. That's 410-857-5444 to join the Cavalcade to Freedom. America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
This is Randall Yearout on Jurisdiction. When the U.S. territories applied for admission into the Union as states, the overarching principle that drove this decision was the desire to determine their own destinies and to be removed from what the U.S. Constitution calls the exclusive legislative jurisdiction of the Congress over the properties owned by the U.S. government. When what is now the state of Washington removed itself from this exclusive jurisdiction, it was required to write its own constitution, which would provide for a representative republican form of government for its citizens, such as the case for every state which joined our union. Today, our U.S. government officials and bureaucrats have lost sight of this fact and now want to reassert exclusive legislative jurisdiction over the states and turn them into administrative subdivisions as though we were territories again. Sorry, U.S. government, but the Constitution says you don't have that authority. And Americans are beginning to realize that our founders intended for the individual states to either succeed or fail based on their own laws and policies. If the people don't like the way a particular state operates, they can move to another one where they do. The way our federal government operates today, the entire nation either succeeds or fails based on the policies of 535 legislators in Washington, D.C. And from what we can see from its history of failed social policies, I don't think these guys could pour sand out of a boot if the directions were written on the heel. We need to replace the socialist mindset in Washington, D.C. and our state governments with a restored American view of law and government.
This constitutional message has been brought to you by the members of the Constitution Party. Visit us at www.constitutionparty.com.
Liberty Works Radio Network.
The American Dream was given birth by Samuel Adams, the father of the American Revolution. For 40 years, Sam agitated the American colonists to rebel against the British monarchy. His sacrificial effort cost him the entire fortune he inherited from his father. He was captivated by John Locke's theory that the average man was capable of governing himself, that an aristocracy was counterproductive and oppressive, and that the only lawful function of government was the protection of life and property. All else was an obnoxious intrusion into the affairs of the individual. Those who knew Sam and worked closely with him called him the last of the Puritans. He understood that rights come from God. He declared,
"The right to freedom, being the gift of God, it is not in the power of man to alienate this gift and voluntarily become a slave."
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting. America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Determination. Pass it on. Brooke Ellison is a surprising person.
When I was 11 years old, I was hit by a car, and no one expected me to live.
She surprised people by living.
I've been paralyzed from the neck down and on a ventilator since that time.
And she surprised them by going to college.
Tomorrow, I will graduate from Harvard.
Brooke Ellison, back on top.
Determination. Pass it on.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting. now live from coast to coast and around the globe. More real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. My name is Joe Bannister, your host, agentfortruth.com and freedomabovefortune.com. Our guest is Randi Engel, and she's talking about an incredibly chilling subject, basically vital organ transplantation, and whether or not the donor of that organ is alive or dead when the donation occurs. And she proposes, through a tremendous amount of investigative research, that in fact the donor is still living and must be killed in order for that organ to be transplanted to a recipient. So before the break, we were talking about surgeon Christian Barnard, and yes, I was fascinated with that story. So Randi, maybe you could describe to the listeners Dr. Christian Barnard.
Yes, I remember him distinctly. He was a well-publicized physician in the mid-1960s, and he was quite handsome. And I was a teenager then, and I think that was what first, you know, attracted me. And I just distinctly remembered the name. Well, I didn't have any idea back then about his background, but when I was investigating this issue, I came upon a book on his life. And what I learned was, first of all, Dr. Barnard was a medical graduate here in the United States. Even though he lived in South Africa, he had attended the University of Minnesota. And it was there that he met Dr. Norman Shumway, who was a pioneer researcher in the whole area of vital organ transplantation. When Barnard went back to South Africa, he conducted the first kidney transplant in his country, and that was, the date was October of 1967. But what he was really interested in was cardiac surgery and human heart transplant. So what he did was, the first thing he needed was a recipient who would be willing to be part of the heart transplant experiment. And in November of 1967, he found a 54-year-old patient by the name of Louis Wojcinski, who agreed to participate in the experiment. So he had his recipient for the heart. What he didn't have was a donor. But 1 month later, on December 3rd, 1967, there was a young girl. She was in a car with her mother, and they were in a serious car accident. Her name was Denise Darvell, and her mother was killed instantly, but she was seriously brain damaged and was taken to the hospital. That very same day, Christian Barnard got permission to take not only Denise's heart, but also her other organs in this first heart transplant. The operation lasted about 9 hours and employed a team of about 30 personnel, medical personnel, and included on that team was Christian's brother, Marius. So the first problem that was facing Barnard even before, of course, he started the operation, was that Denise's brain was damaged, but her heart was healthy and it was beating, and that would indicate, under, you know, traditional whole body standards, that she was still alive. Well, how was he going to take the heart, her heart, if she was still alive? So at the after the operation occurred, he told the press that he just waited for her heart to stop naturally, but nobody knew the truth actually until 40 years later, when we learned that at his brother Marius's urging, Christian had injected a concentrated dose of potassium to paralyze Denise's heart, thus rendering her, she was technically dead, she was not actually dead. But everything was in preparation, so they cut the major vessels, they cooled the heart, and they sewed it into the recipient. The question was she really dead? And of course she was dead after they cut out her her heart. At the very same time that this was happening in South Africa, in the United States here, in Brooklyn, there was a physician named Dr. Adrian Kanwensky, who cut out a beating heart out of a live three-day-year-old baby, and transplanted that heart into an 18-day-old baby with heart disease. And at the end of the day, unfortunately, both babies were dead. But the Christian Bernard story and the story about the transplantation of one live baby's heart to another live baby's heart it stirred enough medical controversy that there was a committee formed. It was the Harvard Medical School Ad Hoc Committee. And their task was to actually redefine death. Now, what I mean by that is that they knew, the surgeons knew that you, who were in the transplantation field, that you couldn't get healthy organs from cadavers, mainly because of the loss of blood supply to the organs, which happens after true death. And after circulation and respiration in the normal body has stopped, you have to extract the heart and the liver within 4 to 5 minutes, and for the kidneys it's a little longer. You can wait up to 30 minutes to extract them. So here's the conundrum for the surgeons. They realize that in dealing with the unpaired vital organ transplantation, that you had to redefine death and establish a new criteria, one that would legally permit the extraction of vital organs from a living human being. But the definition really was not to protect any patient, of course, but it was to protect the surgeon, because without this redefinition, he would then could be charged with medical murder or so. That was the problem. Well, the Harvard Medical School Ad Hoc Committee came to the rescue, and they created let me preface this statement by the committee knew what the problem was, and they realized that that transplantation surgery couldn't continue unless death could be redefined. And so this is exactly what happened. The committee redefined death as brain death, and the report was published in August of 1968. And as I say, the rest is pretty much history.
So this committee, I mean, was it kind of a tail wagging the dog kind of thing, that somehow it percolated through the medical establishment that we need to redefine what's been thought of as death for hundreds of years, or hundreds of thousands of years, it seems like there would have to be quite a little conspiracy going on there in order to, or was it that organ transplantation was so phenomenal and such a breakthrough that there was just a fervor about taking care of
them? Well, it was probably true in both the instances that you mentioned. This brain death, actually, you know, when they started the committee, there was no actual effort at, you know, devising some scientific method of observation and hypothesis followed by verification. In other words, the committee realized that it had to redefine death, and it had to do it in such a way that it would keep the door open for taking vital organs from people who were still alive. So all they did was just state the fact that, brain death is the equivalent of actual death. And actually that really brings us to the whole issue of brain death and whether, that's a legitimate criteria or whether it was simply a fraudulent means of acquiring organs for transplantation. Now, when people say, you know, brain death, biologically speaking, there is really no one organ or one system that controls all our bodily functions. There's an interdependency of functions and organs, and so if a person's brain is injured, there are other organs which exist. In fact, as I pointed out in the article, when a human embryo is conceived, that little child, that tiny child, actually doesn't develop a brain until he's 6 weeks old. Yet he's considered a living human being from the moment of conception. There was also a recent article about a little boy who has been revealed that he has no cerebellum, and yet he can speak, he's capable of learning. The problem with brain death is that we really know so little about how the brain functions. What happens when one part of the brain is damaged? Do other parts of the brain take over? So we have a definition that of brain death which does not take into consideration how little we actually do know about brain death. Now, if we are talking about normal death, we know that. We recognize the signs of life in a human being includes, temperature, pulse, blood pressure, respiration, reflexes. And we know the signs of death because that means there is no breathing, there's no heartbeat, there's no pulse or blood pressure. And we know that once the soul has departed from the body, there only remains a corpse, and we know those signs. The body is rigid; it's unresponsive to stimuli. You can't respirate a corpse. A pacemaker, you can attach it to a corpse, but it isn't going to bring the corpse back to life. And there's no healing in a corpse. And the last stage, of course, is the putrefaction and decomposition of the body. But if we compare these signs, the signs of life and the signs of death, and we look at the brain death patient, then we can see what all the controversy is about, because the person who is declared brain dead, is his body is warm and flexible, he's got a beating heart, he's got normal color, temperature, blood pressure, most of his functions continue. This includes digestion. He is capable of excretion. He has a normal urine output. If he's given intravenous feedings, blood transfusion, antibiotics, he's given other medications necessary to keep him in tip-top shape for the transplantation operation.
There's a reaction. We have a break coming up, Randy. So our guest is Randy Engel, and she's telling us this fascinating story about organ transplantation. And we'll be right back after these messages.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
It's not easy being a veteran.
Coming back from Iraq or Afghanistan, not everyone understands that.
You don't feel the same.
Join us at communityofveterans.org.
And connect to others who are going through the same thing.
Because no one knows what it's like to come back unless they were there.
Brought to you by Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America.
I know what you're going through.
I've been there.
It seems these days I'm in a haze and I can't concentrate on things, can't eat or sleep, feel incomplete and kinda scared and creepy. I look over my shoulder lots and shudder when I watch TV. I bite my nails and cuticles and watch my words very carefully. I bite my lip a lot and fidget with the buttons on my blouse. Why? Because there's a communist living in the White House. Why aren't people shocked or something? Why aren't people up in arms? Does anyone read history or see red flags or hear alarms? The streets are filled with deaf and dumb as I squeak like a mouse. There's a communist living in the White House. You may say, do I have any evidence to support my suppositions? His grandparents were socialists. His mother was. His father was a communist. He had Marxist professors. He taught a course in college on Saul Alinsky. He told Joe the Plumber on the campaign trail, spread the wealth, which is a direct quote from the Communist Manifesto written by Karl Marx. He appointed Van Jones to be his green job czar. Van Jones is a purported communist. His church of 20 years, what with Jeremiah Wright preaching, was black liberation theology, which is actually Marxism. Then as soon as he got in office, he had the government take over the banks and the car industry, and now he's trying to jam down our throats socialized medicine and the cabin trade. I mean, how much more proof do you want? Everybody, there's a communist living in the White House. Now what are we going to do about it?
Anticipation for the upcoming, we have some breaking news. The White House is scrambling to do damage control after the president was caught lip-syncing a speech at the...
Providing quality, affordable health insurance in this country, our health care system that's sucking up all the money.
It was too bad because it happened right before he got to the part about how the power for change rests with every American. That's always my favorite part.
It's like, he's just gotten too big, and this just shows that. You know? I mean, he hasn't really done anything good anyway.
The White House seemed to bungle their official response and released a statement claiming the incident was caused by a feedback problem that made it appear that the president's voice was out of time with the movement of his lips. German Chancellor Angela Merkel called Obama's performance disappointing. Network investigation uncovered an exclusive video which appears to show President Obama speaking without pre-recorded audio.
Now, some graduating classes have marched into this stadium in easy times, times of peace and stability. When we call on our graduates, simply to screw it up.
Did you know that no Christian church accepted contraception as morally permissible before 1930? Discover why and how to work with a woman's natural times of being fertile and infertile. Learn a 99% effective method of natural family planning in English or Spanish through classes or home study. Search for a class at the Couple to Couple League's website, ccli.org, or call 800-745-8252.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
If
I could have a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my mom.
I'd probably talk about girls.
We'd probably talk about girls.
Anything. Boys, school, clothes.
You'd be amazed at what they'll talk about if you give them the chance.
If I had a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If it were real heart-to-heart, I'd tell my parents what I'm going through.
I'd probably talk to them about growing up.
I'd probably tell my dad that I wish we'd do more stuff together.
I don't think it has to be a heart-to-heart. I just want to talk.
Give your family everything. Give them your time.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting. Now live from coast to coast and around the globe. More real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. I am the Agent for Truth, Joe Bannister, agentfortruth.com and freedomabovefortune.com. Our guest today is Randy Engel, and telling us this fascinating but chilling story of organ transplantation. And I had to interrupt you there before the break, Randy, but you were describing the, I have no medical training whatsoever, but I mean, you're describing just clear, you know, ways that any person can look and see, you know, what, how a dead person doesn't function and how a live person does. And just because they may not be able to talk or open their eyes, there's all these other factors, such as the flexibility of their joints, excretory functions. They have a body temperature that's still warm. So please continue, and sorry for the interruption.
Well, this is a very important juncture in our conversation today, because our listeners have to understand that when you sign a donor card and you say you can take my organs when I'm dead, normally that individual is not informed that the definition of dead has been changed. So when you are declared brain dead at the hospital, or your child or a relative is declared brain dead at the hospital, what you have to realize is that from that point on, you're not considered a patient in the traditional sense. You're, as I said before, you're now a spare parts factory, and everything that is done to the brain dead donor is actually not for his benefit, but for the benefit of the recipient of the organ, which is going to be excised from his body. And the implications for this is very, very important. Let me give you one example. Before organs can be taken, there is normally a test administered. It's called an apnea test. Now, because of the nature of the apnea test, the organ transplant staff generally does not ask permission from the loved ones to perform the test, because if the loved ones knew what the test involved, they would never give permission for it. So normally the organ transplant team or those involved in getting the informed consent will not inform the individuals who are making the decision to give permission for the organ donation. This information is withheld. And now, the apnea test, what they do here is that the ventilator, which has been used to on the donor, that ventilator is taken away for up to 10 minutes to observe if the patient can demonstrate that he or she can breathe on his or her own. Now, obviously, the patient always gets worse after this test. If the
patient doesn't breathe on his own, then this becomes the signal that the candidate is in fact brain dead and that the organs can be excised. The tragedy here is that for patients who have been in a major accident, many times they are borderline. They are touch and go. And when the apnea test is administered, sometimes it causes direct death of the donor. But the apnea test is not given to that donor for anything other than to establish that he's a candidate to have his organs taken off. In other words, there's no benefit for the test for him. The only reason the test is given is to discern whether or not he is brain dead and the organs taken. So you know, that's one important consideration. But there are other
a hugely chilling part of it. I mean, foundational, because you know, who makes that decision? Is there a organ transplantation industry person that's standing outside the door and like telling, you know, saying to the doctor, hey, you know, it's about time for that apnea test? Or what have you found about how that process works? Because that's amazing.
Well, let me say that originally there was supposed to be a litany of tests to determine brain death. I think there was at least 5 tests given when the criteria of brain death was established by the Harvard Committee. And in 1995, the American Academy of Neurology established that this apnea test should be administered, and there were also some other guidelines. But what has happened is that over the last 40 or so years, the definition of brain death has been altered. I think there is now 30 different definitions of brain death, each more liberal than the previous one. In other words, the organ transplant industry has maneuvered it so that whereas many, many tests were required before a donor was declared brain dead, now, in 2010, we are now down to one test that takes approximately 1 hour. The American Academy of Neurology has now kind of telescoped the time and also the numbers of tests so that the organs can be retrieved earlier, and obviously there would be more organ donations as you get more and more liberal definition of brain death. So, you know, essentially what we've got here is, I call it checkbook euthanasia. You've got transplant programs, and these are really highly desirable for hospitals because they are high-profit programs. When you're giving vigorous CPR to what they call the living dead, it's not as cost-effective as excising and selling, you know, the organs to waiting recipients. And this is one of the important features and that individuals should be aware of when they're talking about organ donation and, you know, whose interests are being served. Certainly not in the interest of the donor, and it is in the interest of the organ transplant industry.
Wow. So that, once again, the money, the root of all evil, is But that means that would involve boards of directors and the administration of hospitals and whoever the ultimate owners are. I mean, everybody's involved in this process, some, you know, with more knowledge than others. But if all they care about is the bottom line, and they have to choose between organ transplantation programs and, you know, saving people's lives, the bottom line would point more towards the organ transplant.
Yeah, and when you look at the figures, I was quite startled. A healthy beating heart or vital organ brings an average of $24,000. And the body of a brain-dead donor, that is the total body, brings an average of $70,000. Now, in a single year, recipients of vital organs or their insurance companies, they're going to pay out about $3 billion to the organ donor industry. And not only do we have this, the organ donor industry itself, but it's given birth to a whole large international market and black market for other spare body parts. And these body parts are provided by, you know, hospitals, funeral parlors, morgues, and crematoriums. So, you've got a single body, and after the major organs are taken, they can also actually just clear the body for tissues and corneas and ligaments. The one thing about this, the profit issue, is that the donor families who are urged, you know, to give the gift of life, they don't receive any monetary benefit for their gift of life. And that is another reason why I use the term industry. Let's talk about a little bit about the designated requester. You were just talking about you know, all those individuals who are involved in the transplantation process. And the major agent here is actually the federal government. The federal government has become deeply involved, for reasons that aren't particularly clear, in promoting organ donation. And there's currently about 63 donor agencies that have been approved by the federal government to procure vital organs for transplantation. And these donor industries have then, you know, spawned a very large bureaucratic network. And among the key players in this vast bureaucracy is an individual called the designated requester. Now, back in 1998, the federal government passed a provision, and it said that physicians, nurses, and chaplains, and other healthcare workers could not speak to a family of a potential organ donor without first obtaining approval from the regional organ retrieval system. And if a potential for transplantation existed, here's where the role comes in for the designated requester. That's the person who, if you have a loved one who's been injured, this is the person that will come into the room, visit with the family of the patient first, and that includes families where they're actually opposed to organ donations, because the designated requester has been trained. He or she is a very active professional, and they have a very high rate of success for obtaining permission for organ donations from grieving family members, because they are really trained to sell. They have to sell the concept of organ donation, and they'll use phrases like, you know, your loved, the donor will be giving the gift of life, your loved one's heart will live on in someone else. And these are all kind of platitudes that are really all empty of true meaning when you understand, you know, what is actually going on. That family is being given a script. These designated individuals are really trained to to probe and to pressure these families who are actually, I mean, can you imagine the trauma and the stress of being told that, you know, your especially your young son or daughter or grandchild has been hospitalized, is not expected to live, and in they come with the you know, with this gift of life propaganda and pressure the patients to you know, to give knowledge and consent.
It's
just absolutely heartless.
Horrible way to thing you would not be expecting. We have another break coming up, so I'd like to get more into that designated requester phenomenon. Our guest is Randy Engel, and this is the Freedom Above Fortune radio show, agentfortruth.com and freedomabovefortune.com. USCL.info is one of the websites. We'll get some more after the break, and we'll be right back.
Is Liberty Works Radio Network enlightening you to the real problems we face in our constitutional republic? Has it helped you to better understand what has to be done to save America from becoming a third world nation? If so, do your part in spreading this voice of truth and enlightenment to your fellow Americans. Join the Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. Go to www.libertyworksradionetwork.com for details.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
This is Randall Yearout on Leaders. Our government leaders swear an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States before they're allowed to exercise the powers of their offices. This oath automatically requires those office holders to act as a check on usurped or abused power among those within any branch of the government. Why is it, then, that when the Congress assumes for itself powers reserved by the Constitution to the states or the people, the President doesn't object with a defense of the Constitution and refuse to execute unlawful legislation? Or when the President creates Soviet-style czars to violate the public rights, why doesn't the Congress speak up? Or when the court begins striking down the laws of the Union states in violation of the public rights and in favor of international norms, why don't the other two branches bring misdemeanor charges against those offending judges? It appears that our leaders in government think that a non-intervention policy on another branch's behavior is more virtuous than executing the oath they took to support and defend the Constitution. James Madison said in Federalist Paper 51 that if men were angels, no government would be necessary, and that if angels were our governors, no constitution would be necessary. Our constitution is necessary, however, and our public officials are proving to us the very reason this is so. The constitution outlines the restricted powers we, the people, gave to our governors. For our leaders to disobey them is to break the supreme law of the land, which is to be dealt with by impeachment and removal from office. I think the only way to effectively ensure the reinstatement of our American form of law and government is to replace nearly every last congressman with one who will honor his oath.
This constitutional message has been brought to you by the members of the Constitution Party. Visit us at www.constitutionparty.com.
Along with Samuel Adams, Patrick Henry was most instrumental in establishing the American dream.
Henry made the following plea. The battle, sir, is not for the strong alone. It is to the vigilant, the active, the brave. There is no retreat. But in submission and slavery, our chains are forged. Their clanking may be heard upon the plains of Boston. The war is inevitable. And let it come. I repeat, sir, let it come. Oh, gentlemen may cry, peace, peace. But there is none. The war has already begun. The next gale that sweeps from the north shall bring to our ears the clash of resounding arms. Is life so dear and peace so sweet to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Give me liberty or give me death.
Patrick Henry, one of the foremost framers of individual and religious freedom, a son of liberty and the American dream.
The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
He went without food, not to lose weight, but to help people lose generations of hate. While many around him rose up with violence, he sat down for peace. When others used religion as an excuse for war, he used it to remind them of love. Mahatma Gandhi made the world a far better place by reaching out with the strength he cultivated within his soul. Soul, pass it on.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
The viewpoints expressed on Liberty Works Radio Network are not necessarily those of the network, its affiliates, or sponsors. This is Liberty Works Radio Network. Now live from coast to coast and around the globe. More real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. Our guest is Randi Engel. She wrote a fascinating article, Don't Give Your Heart Away, Know the Facts About Vital Organ Transplantation. It was published in the Catholic Family News, January 2011 edition. In case we don't have enough time near the end, and I don't want to cut off this opportunity, any books or other articles where we could point the listeners to, Randi?
Well, I think the major articles would be posted on the Life Guardian Foundation and also on the U.S. Coalition for Life. I did an interview with Dr. Byrne, and that interview is gives a general overall look at the organ transplantation industry, and that is at the U.S. Coalition for Life website.
Okay, and that's USCL, the acronym USCL.info, as well as the other websites, michaelfund.org. And, of course, going to a search engine and typing in Life Guardian Foundation.
Right.
Okay, so before the break, we were talking about the designated requester and had to interrupt you for the break. So if you want to continue talking about how these trained professionals will come in and descend upon the family, the grieving, sad family at the hospital, and they're trained in their presentation, please continue.
Yes, you know, the ostensible purpose of the federal government saying that, you know, the attending physician and surgeons cannot be the one who spoke to the grieving parents in, who are in a state of shock. Now, at first, that would appear, well, that would be good because then the person coming in to interview the individual family involved in making this critical decision, they wouldn't have an ulterior motive. But that's absolutely not true because the designated requester has been that individual is trained, and the script that he's giving to the so-called donor family is very well orchestrated. It's rehearsed. In fact, I didn't know this at the time, but was informed that they actually employ actors and actresses who come in, and these actors and actresses they simulate the shock and grief of the and despair of the patient's loved ones, and this is to give the designated requester experience in dealing with these individuals at the time of the request for the organs, so that, you know, when at this occasion there really isn't true consent, because I don't know of any individual who would approve of their organs of their loved ones being taken without the patient actually being dead. And that is the criteria. And actually they couldn't get, as they found out in the 1960s, they couldn't get good organs for transplantation from people who were truly dead. So then they had to rearrange the definition of death to in order to be able to take out the organs from a live individual. I wanted to point out that there are many states now that are trying to pass presumed consent laws. In other words, an individual in an accident, it is presumed that you can take his organs without his explicit statement that he wants to be a donor, unless that individual has an opt-out, has made an opt-out statement or carries an opt-out card. So this is really very important that teenagers actually carry cards with them now, along with their driver's license. And for goodness sakes, if you find that your child or grandchild has signed a donor card, you need to get that individual to contact the Motor Bureau Vehicle Department and just explain that they do not wish to be a donor any longer, because it really is a fraudulent means of obtaining these organs, and certainly there is no informed consent. I remember when I was interviewing Dr. Byrne for the first time, and he kind of asked me some questions, and these questions I'm just going to go ahead and ask the audience and your listeners to really think about. And that is, for example, the point, why do health insurance agencies cover intensive care cost for brain dead patients? Now, they don't do it for cadavers. If someone is truly dead, does the health insurance cover intensive care? What does the corpse need with intensive care if he's truly dead? Another question, why do brain dead patients often receive intravenous fluids, antibiotics, ventilator care, and other life support measures? What does a corpse who is truly dead need with these measures? Is it right and just for physicians and the designated requester to tell their families that their loved one is brain dead when she or he is not truly dead at all? How can brain dead patients have normal bodily functions, including vital signs, if they're really dead? How can a brain dead pregnant mother deliver a normal, healthy infant? Why does a ventilator work on someone declared brain dead, but you can't get a ventilator to work on a true corpse? Why is it wrong to carry out the burial or cremation of a brain dead person? The answer is, of course, that the brain dead person is not truly dead, and this is really the issue that we're dealing with today, Joe. You can't be dead and alive at the same time. Now, you may be in the process of dying, but in the process of dying, you're not yet a corpse. You're a living individual who is dying. And I asked that question, can you be alive and dead at the same time? That was a question that St. Augustine And I don't think he had vital organ transplantation in mind, but that question he tackled way back in his own time, and his opinion was, no, you cannot be dead and alive at the same time. It's one or the other. And so that's, I thought that was a rather curious matter. Sometimes people...
I was going to ask if in the intensive care, I'm just trying to picture how this would take place, that the doctors, these professionals would come in contact with the family, but because the patient is in intensive care and hooked up to all these things, I imagine that they're isolated. In other words, the family can't come in and see, well, gee, his heart's still beating because look at the monitor. And do they even try to keep the family isolated from the patient so that all the family gets is what they're being told?
Yes, many times this is true. At other times, what the regular procedure is that they'll be told that the individual is brain dead, and they'll be invited into the room where the patient is. You know, his body is covered. And all those instruments that you were talking about, they're kept in the background. All the loved ones see really is that is the bed, and the individual has been declared brain dead, and they are asked to pay their respects, and then they're hustled out. And that is the last time that they will see that individual before the actual funeral takes place. But, of course, by that time, the organs have been taken out, and you're looking at a body, essentially, that has no innards.
But, of course, because a group of people have made a decision to play God, and that person's life has already, you know, the death warrant has already been signed.
Yes, and that's why I made that really important point of when you sign the donor card, you're really signing your rights to be treated as a human being and a patient, because after you're declared brain dead, everything that happens to you is not for your benefit. And even where you can be borderline, you know, a touch and go, where there might be a slight hope for you, after you've been declared a brain dead, there really is no, everything is done for the recipient, not for you. And I was recently attacked by an individual who had actually was a recipient of a major organ, and this individual charged and said that there's never been a case where a person has been diagnosed as brain dead and lived to tell the story. And of course, that's an absolute fabrication. There have been many stories of people who have allegedly been brought back from the dead. But the truth is, they were declared brain dead. They weren't truly dead. They were declared brain dead. And there was a case back in 2007 where a young man was involved in a ATV accident, and he sustained critical head injuries. And they gave him two tests and determined that he was brain dead. And so the organ harvesting team was flown in by helicopter, and family members were encouraged to, you know, say their final farewells, and they were making preparations for the funeral. But luckily for this young man, among the relatives who were paying their last respect were a couple of cousins, both of whom were nurses. And one of the cousins really would be on a whim or a hunch. He pulled out his pocket knife and he ran the blade up the sole of the donor's foot. And all of a sudden, the donor pulled his foot away, and when the cousin dug his fingernail into one of the donor's nails, the brain dead patient swung his arm across and almost hit the man. He was definitely alive, and 5 days later, the donor opened up his eyes, and 48 days later, he was walking out of the rehab and returning home. And what I thought was the most unusual and kind of, again, another chilling aspect of the organ donor industry was that when he was declared brain dead, in the presence of the family members and the doctor who was delivering the verdict, this donor said he actually heard them talking about him, and he was thinking, wait a minute, I'm not dead. I'm trapped in this body, and I'm alive. And he said he can remember all these feelings going through him and thinking, oh, they're going to take my heart out of me while I'm still alive.
Wow, that's incredible. We've got a break coming up. All right, we have a break coming up. Our guest is Randy Engel, and we'll be right back after these messages. Thanks for joining us.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Dad, where did the clouds come from?
Well, buddy, that's a good question.
Is this worm a boy or a girl? Why are church orange?
Actually,
Dad, why don't you have any hair on your head?
How do birds fly?
Why is dirt brown?
Why can't I fly?
Why can't I fly?
Are we there yet?
You may not have all the answers, but if they're comfortable coming to you now when the questions are small, they'll come to you with the bigger questions later.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Give your family everything. Give them your time.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Everybody, gather around. I'm here to give you anything you like. You want free college, energy, mortgages, whatever you like. You have come to the right place. Why? I'll tell you why. Who can take your money?
Who can take your money?
With a twinkle in their eye.
A twinkle in their eye.
Take it all away and give it to some other guy. The government.
The government.
The government can.
The government can.
And who can tax the sunrise?
Who can tax the sunrise?
Who can tax the trees?
Who can tax the trees?
Let you run a business and collect up all the fees. The government.
The government.
Oh, the government can.
The government can.
And the government can, 'cause they mix it up with lies and make it all taste good. To pay for all of their solutions. Healthcare, climate change, pollution. Throw away the Constitution. And who can give a bailout?
Who can give a bailout?
Tell us to behave.
Tell us to behave.
And make the founding fathers roll over in their grave. The government.
The government.
Oh, the government can. Government can, 'cause they mix it up with lies and make it all taste good.
Make it all taste good.
The government takes everything we make. They're power hungry and malicious. Their economics are fictitious. Soon we'll have to eat our dishes.
Delicious.
Oh, who can be a failure? Ourselves a raise, the government.
The government.
Oh, the government
can. The government
can. And the government can, 'cause they make it up with lies and make it all taste good.
Make it all taste good.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Mother Teresa couldn't do it all, but she gave her all. Compassion. She didn't just visit the sick and poor. She moved in with them because they needed help. Mother Teresa couldn't do it all, but she gave her all. Compassion. Pass it on.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Now live from coast to coast and around the globe, more real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. My name is Joe Bannister, your host. Very, very happy to have Randy Engel on the show with us today. This fascinating but chilling story about organ transplantation. And before the break, she was telling us this amazing story of this ATV rider who had a mishap and was basically declared brain dead, and had the good fortune of having some cousins who were nurses. So, Randy, go ahead and continue with that story, and then you said you had yet another one.
Yes, in fact, the individual, if the listener would like to track down that story, the name of the individual was Zach Dunlap, Z-A-C-H-D-U-N-L-A-P, and he appeared after he was released from the hospital. He actually appeared on a number of shows. I think he was probably on the Today Show telling his story, and he was, and again, he repeated that when he was being declared brain dead, he was inwardly, he said he was just furious. He was, he kept on saying to myself, I'm not dead, I'm not dead, and they're going to, they're trying to designate me as being dead. So, his story, I found, that was absolutely fascinating. And there are other stories. There was one that stuck in my mind was there was a Minneapolis woman who had suffered a massive cerebral hemorrhage in January of 2008, and she was declared a brain dead. And while the life support was being removed and the family was planning her funeral, the patient regained consciousness, and soon she was well enough to return. Now, the headlines when the case was made public was that she was returned from the dead, but in truth she wasn't really dead at all, because brain death is not true death. And if I can get any message across today, that's the message: brain death is not true death.
So do you find that does the mainstream media, obviously it's a sensational story to say somebody came back from the dead, but is that because the mainstream media is buying into the lie that they were already dead and that they rose from the dead, or is it because, a misunderstanding, or do you see it as a purposeful editorial decision, or any information on that?
Well, I think the organ transplant industry spends millions and millions of dollars in propaganda, and certainly I don't think the general reporter for the local news media is any better informed than, an individual like myself who doesn't really even think of those terms. But the surgeons know the truth, and the attending nurses and the anesthesiologist They know the truth. In fact, in the United Kingdom, the Anesthesiology Association was very adamant in that their nurses would not participate in any transplantation unless the corpse was given, was anesthetized. Now, what is the corpse? I mean, that really defies all common sense. If the person is truly dead, why does he have to be anesthetized? But anyway, and that regulation was passed so that if you are a organ donor in the United Kingdom and, you know, your organs are taken before the organs are taken, you are required to have a, to be anesthetized. Because what they were finding is it was very distressful for the attending nurses to have the corpse, you know, jolt when the surgeon, you know, cracked the ribs open, expanded the rib cage, and then excised the heart. You know, Joe, when I think of the procedure, all I can think of was the you know, the barbarians who used to, you know, rip the hearts out of their captives, and it's such a barbaric procedure in the sense that within the context that we've been lied to all along for 40 years here.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I hate to sound like I'm judging people, but I mean, these nurses, if they actually got up the gumption to, you know, get these laws passed, but it never occurred to them that if the so-called corpse is jumping and leaping and shivering, that it's still alive. It's just amazing
the
that there's
still alive. Yes, but again,
looks like the brain death is maybe occurring among the medical professionals.
Yes, yeah, that is, well, I don't know if it's so much, I think they're probably, you know, mentally, they've done this rationalization. This individual is going to die, we think. So that even if we hasten his death, someone else is going to be able to, you know, to live as a result of the death. If they didn't have that kind of rationalization, I don't know how they could actually, you know, sleep at night. As for the surgeons, there's a great deal of money involved in transplantation surgery. I did read an article regarding, you know, the feelings of nurses and attendants. Actually, the heart transplantation teams are usually flown in for the occasion, but it really is the local nurses that have to attend, for example, the donor in the ICU. They're the ones that have to give antibiotics to the donor who's been declared brain dead. They're the ones that if the designated brain dead individual is in the hospital long enough, if that individual is a child, that child can actually go through puberty, signs of puberty. Now, a corpse doesn't do that. Again, it's just we've been so brainwashed and we don't ask the right questions, and this is the reason why the organ transplant industry can continue to make you know, the fast buck and convince the families of donors that a life is, you know, yes, a life may be saved in terms of the recipient, but it can only be done at the expense of the donor who is not dead.
Wow. Can you talk a little bit more about Dr. Byrne? Because as I understand it from your description, he contacted you, so he already had a tremendous amount of heartache over this. Tell me more about that scenario, because, you know, from a human interest standpoint, he was trying to reach out and get publicity to this issue, correct?
Yes. Dr. Byrne is a Ohio neonatologist, and he, of course, as I mentioned earlier, is the co-founder of the Life Guardian Foundation. He has been on this case for many, many years, and he is not the only one. You know, when Dr. Christian Bernard made his so-called, made history in doing the first organ transplant, heart organ transplant, at the time, there was a tremendous amount of controversy, which the layman never heard about. But there were many, many physicians, including neurosurgeons and other individuals, who reasoned, well, wait a minute now. If you can't get good organs from a cadaver, then that means that the person who is the donor has to be alive. And in other words, this wasn't a great secret. It was a secret in the terms that Dr. Bernard had given a lethal dose of potassium, that he had actually killed Denise right on the table there. But these questions were all out there. But the average individual who didn't have any, wasn't in the medical field or wasn't in the transplant field, they would really have no knowledge of what was going on and the relevancy of brain death. Now, at the time that the Harvard Medical Committee issued this definition, people were aware as to why the committee was doing this. I mean, those who were in the transplant field knew that unless we had a new definition of brain death, surgeons who operated and took the heart of a live patient could be charged with criminal activity. So it was sort of a sub rosa thing in the sense of the American public having any genuine knowledge, so to give real, true, informed consent. But it was there were many individuals like Paul Byrne who, from the very beginning, questioned how was this done, and then when they realized that it was done because there was a new definition of death. My question is, what was wrong with the old definition of death? Why do you have to redefine death if brain death is the same as true death? I mean, didn't that seem silly to you? Why does one have to have a new definition of something if it's the same, has the same meaning?
Exactly. And as you point out in your article, the report, the whole process was to fit already arrived at conclusions.
Yeah, it was essentially a fraud. And, when that document actually appeared, I don't think the names of those individuals who were actually on the committee were actually on the report. But later on, we actually did find out who the individuals were, so that was no longer a secret. But the fact that initially when the report was issued, the individuals didn't want to have their name attached to the document, that should have been a clue that not all was right with the new definition.
Did they, do you know if normally those reports, the authors are disclosed, and whereas this one was kind of odd because it didn't, or is that?
It was, yes, normally this kind of information in medical journals is, it's just, an ordinary part of the reporting process. But as I said, later on, the names were, in fact, made public, but this was after the This was after the big public recognition that this group of individuals had decided to redefine death. And you know, Joe, before we go, I wanted to mention some important aspects of the of organ transplantation that one rarely hears about, because by and large, the industry, the organ transplantation industry, really, I mean, they control the language, they control what the public hears or what the public doesn't hear. And of course, the thing that the public generally will hear is the where you have the recipient of an organ going to the home of the donor family and thanking them for giving him the opportunity to live on. That's part of the propaganda machinery.
Our guest is Randy Engel, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Is Liberty Works Radio Network enlightening you to the real problems we face in our constitutional republic? Has it helped you to better understand what has to be done to save America from becoming a third world nation? If so, do your part in spreading this voice of truth and enlightenment to your fellow Americans. Join the Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. Go to www.libertyworksradionetwork.com for details.
This is Randall Yearout on Subversion. Just based on current facts before us, our nation's political leaders in elected office and both major parties have embraced policies and legislation subversive to our American form of law and government. Therefore, I think it profitable to visit the wisdom of our founding fathers regarding this kind of behavior. Samuel Adams, regarding spreading the wealth around and centralized control of the economy, said these ideas are, quote, as visionary and impractical as those which vest all property in the crown. They are arbitrary, despotic, and in our form of government, unconstitutional. Unquote. These charges could be aimed directly at our president and Congress today. Thomas Jefferson wrote of a central government so strong that it borders on monarchy, "These men have no right to office. If a monarchist be in office anywhere, and it be known to the president, the oath he has taken to support the Constitution imperiously requires the instantaneous dismission of such officer, and I hold the president criminal if he permitted such to remain. To appoint a monarchist to conduct the affairs of a republic is like appointing an atheist to the priesthood." Unquote. The situation in America today is socialism for we the people and a political class who think they're monarchs rather than our agents. Congressmen openly insulting citizens exercising their First Amendment rights to redress. Congressmen taxing future generations without their consent. Presidents and judges approving of all this with their silence. These will be our defining years in the eyes of our children and grandchildren, but if we do nothing, we will come to nothing. We need Americans in great numbers to join us.
This constitutional message has been brought to you by the members of the Constitution Party. Visit us at www.constitutionparty.com.
I will not be taking any questions. As of 10 a.m. this morning, the U.S. Treasury Department has issued a full recall of all 776 billion pieces of U.S. currency in circulation. I know this must seem like a blow coming on the heels of this morning's announcement that our federal budget deficit has passed the $800 billion mark. But regrettably, these particular bills were printed with dye containing toxins that, while completely safe at this moment, will become extremely deadly Friday at exactly 12 noon. As a result, we need to act quickly. Okay, tomorrow all Americans will receive a bag like this in the mail. Do not, under any circumstances, attempt to burn or shred the money yourself. The federal government are the only ones that can destroy the money, as we are the only ones with the proper facilities to do so.
This is a massive recall.
We understand that this recall will be hard on U.S. citizens who will have no more money, but we assure you, if you work hard, you will be eventually able to earn it back.
This is in the best interest of the American people.
This dye poisoning causes your internal organs to rot from within and is really painful until you puke up your guts and die. There really is no time to think about this. Just listen to me and send in the money. Thank you.
Coming back from news every day,
husbands, have you ever worried about the risks to your wife's health from the birth control method she's using?
Why not learn a natural method that's 99% effective and has no risks to her? You can learn natural family planning in English or Spanish through classes or home study. Search for a class at the Couple to Couple League's website at ccli.org or call 800-745-8252.
Join the Cavalcade to Freedom. The Cavalcade back to constitutional government. Climb on board and do your part to proclaiming liberty throughout the land. Join and support Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. To view the strategic plan, to spread the word, and to get information on joining, go to www.libertyworksradionetwork.com or call the fellowship office at 410-857-5444. That's 410-857-5444. To join the Cavalcade to Freedom.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting. Now live from coast to coast and around the globe, more real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. Our guest is Randy Engel.
The fact that one individual had to be killed through the process of obtaining his organ, that's kind of shoved to the background, and you have this very, and I'm sure it's on the part of the recipient. The recipient is thankful he's got, an extended lifetime. Whether or not the recipient is actually knowledgeable about the donor is a question mark. I would say that if the individual who receives the heart donation or liver donation, my guess is he probably, if he has been informed of the conditions necessary for that operation to take place, he probably puts himself in the state of denial, because how does one then justify, someone was killed so that I can live? That's a pretty hard thing to live with, a pretty hard truth to live with. So I don't think the recipient is fully cognizant of what actually takes place. He's the victim of the propaganda also.
And being an accountant, I couldn't help myself. I divided 100,000 into 3 billion, and the 100,000 was if it costs $100,000 for an insurance company to pay for this process, and they pay out $3 billion a year, that's still 30,000 cases of some kind of transplantation. And they may not all be, the unpaired, this kind of thing, but even if it's only, 10%, I mean, that's still 3,000 people, that were killed in order to make this process happen.
Yeah, and Joe, up to this point, we've talked a little bit about the recipient, but we've talked primarily about the first victim in the case, which is of course the donor who has signed over his organs, and of course the next victim are his families who have been forced to accept the fact that this myth of brain death. But there is an area that I wanted to cover, because I hadn't been aware of it, and this is probably a tribute to the industry's ability to keep negatives regarding the actual transplantation process out of the public limelight. And that is the let me cite the source. There's a German PhD. Her name is Anna Bergman, and she wrote a very important article. It appeared in the summer 2008 issue of the Journal of American Physicians and Surgeons, and the article is called Taboo Transgressions in Transplantation Medicine. And what this article is about, of course, it deals with the false definition of brain death. That is the initial part of the article, that the brain dead person is actually not brain not dead by traditional medical standards. But then she talks about the issues with regard to the recipient. And this is something that I had not heard before. And this is that there are psychological reactions that the recipient undergoes when the organs are actually transferred. And that has to do with having the organs of a stranger in one's own body. And this has many times the organ recipient will report that he has nightmares, and the nightmares have to do with this this issue of having a part of a stranger in one's own body, and the individuals. And this, by the way, is applies to a number of the recipients, that they have these destructive fantasies and these issues about the organ inside them. In fact, there was a kidney recipient who wrote an entire dialogue between herself and the new organ that she had received, and she's talking to the organ and saying, you know, who are you? Who were you? And then she asks the end question, are the brain dead really ever dead? So, you know, there are issues that the recipient has to face, which I'm sure they're not advised of at the very beginning. It's you watch these horror movies and then you think about these poor individuals who have to live with the actual horror of having a transplanted flesh in your own body. It was just just one of these issues that the organ transplant industry will never tell you about, but which actually exists.
Sure, and I through my reading, which I've not been as involved in the pro-life issue, regrettably, as someone like yourself, but there does seem to be this, when you start playing God, when people start doing these things, you do find, like, even with abortion and how they talk about the devastating consequences to a woman who's had an abortion, in terms of mental issues and physical issues, and also with the fetal cell research, and I mean every time the humans begin to play God and do these things, there's these unforeseen consequences, which, you know, for Catholics and Christians, you can kind of infer what's going on there, correct?
Yes, yes. In fact, one of the, there's a lot of complications involved as to why the truth has really not permeated the popular media. And part of this is, for example, the the entity that you would think would be a major opponent of vital organ transplantation, being the Catholic Church, has actually sent out mixed signals with regard to the licitness of this particular procedure. Now, both popes, John Paul II and the current pontiff, former Cardinal Ratzinger, now Benedict the 15th, Benedict the 16th, they have made statements which unfortunately are open-ended. What they're saying is that in order for Catholics to agree to be organ donors, it must be that when their organs are taken, they are truly dead. And to some extent, there are various Vatican dicasteries who have taken up the issue. And much to my dismay, a number of these offices, which are, you know, supposedly give the official Vatican position on the issue, have come out in favor of brain death. I find this very difficult, you know, as a Catholic to understand, and that's why I'm so grateful to individuals like Paul Byrne, because last year the Life Guardian Foundation, in cooperation with a number of pro-life European physicians and jurists and biologists, they all came together in Rome, and they had their own conference, and they had many splendid speakers, some of them, you know, going talking about their early questioning of the transplantation industry, you know, back in the late 60s when it first got started. And they all repeat the same thing, that is that the church has always taught that the soul permeates the entire body. You cannot say, for example, because someone has had a severe brain injury, that the soul has departed. When a person is truly dead, his soul is no longer a part of what you have as a cadaver. His soul has departed for judgment. And we know at the end of time that the soul will be reunited with the body, and then you have, you know, the reality of a judgment of heaven or hell for eternity. But we have had a number of very ambiguous statements from the Vatican, and what we need to really have is an open and clear a debate, so that Catholics can really understand what the truth of the matter is, and not be signing over their vital organs in the numbers that they are now, thinking they're giving the gift of life. It's
sure.
Not.
I could not agree more. And this is why I'm really hoping to get this, you know, not only the listeners, regular listeners to my show, but archived, and try to get the word out on this. And so we only have a minute or so left, so I just wanted to go over the websites again. The U.S. Coalition for Life, the acronym would, of course, be USCL, and it's uscl.info. The Michael Fund, at michaelfund.org. And then your publishing company is newanglepublishing.com, new, N-E-W, obviously, and then your last name, E-N-G-E-L, publishing.com. I guess Engel, if you put an A there, it'd be Angel.
Yes.
so just think of Angel, but put an E-N for Engel, Randy Engel. newanglepublishing.com. And then I did find that Dr. Burns' website and Bernice Jones' LifeGuardianFoundation.org.
That's right. So, and they have a number of publications that the listeners can order.
Fantastic. Well, Randy, thank you so much for being with us here on the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. And maybe we can have you back again to talk about other pro-life issues. This is one that I was not aware of, and I'm sure many Americans and people in the whole world aren't aware of. So let's hope that, you know, with the Holy Spirit's guidance and the Lord's guidance, we can get the word out.
Thank you very much, Joe.
Okay. Thank you, Randy.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me on the Freedom Above Fortune radio show this week. Just wanted to remind you, you can join my email list by going to freedomabovefortune.com and clicking on mailing list on the left-hand side of the webpage. I also have a website at agentfortruth.com, and there's plenty of good information for you there, as well as biographical information about myself. I really appreciate you listening to the show, and I hope that you have a great weekend. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye.